Welcome to Marketing Beats, Marketing Bites. Thank you for joining us for our first episode, hopefully the first of many, where we'll be speaking to different experts from across the world of marketing to bring you a fresh new perspective on the industry. My name is Jackie Parr, I'm the editor of Marketing Beats, and I'll be your host for this episode. So, to kick things off on the right note, we are joined today by two absolute powerhouses from the marketing world. Rory McKinty, Brand and Marketing Director at Gymbox, and Dom Boyd, Managing Director at Kantar UK Insights. Thank you both for coming along and joining us today.
Hi, lovely to be invited.
We're going to be picking your brains on the importance of attention, or more accurately, what we have termed the attention deficit. So we all know that simply seeing an ad isn't enough to capture any sort of meaningful attention these days, and that ads need to make a real impact if they're going to have any sort of measurable effect on their audience. But with so much noise out there, how can brands make sure their campaigns are the ones which have cut through and make the leap from impact to engagement? So Rory, this feels like a very natural point to come to you. For people who don't know, Gymbox is a challenger gym brand, which is well known for its attention grabbing and some would say disruptive approach to marketing. The last year has been particularly notable, hasn't it, Rory? So can you explain for our listeners where it all started?
Oh, wow, what a question. Where did it all start? Well, I think the first thing to know, yeah, you're right, trying to get cut through in the market now more than ever is so difficult. And I think particularly for a challenger brand like ourselves, who may not have massive budgets, it's trying to get campaigns and attention that creates talkability, that gets through the noise of all the marketing that's out there. And I think as a brand, Gymbox have been very good at that over the years, and particularly in the last year. And I think, you know, that there's a few things that I like to talk about when we do our campaigns, because to the outsider, they might look a little bit random and a little bit attention grabbing and a little bit, dare I say, gimmicky for if you see it in the first instance. However, there is a strategy behind what we do. Our tagline is anything goes. So we have this philosophy where you know, whatever you do in the gym, however you want to work out, whatever your goals are, Gymbox is the place where anything goes. And that then holds true to our marketing and to our campaigns. And we always layer things back up to that strategy around anything goes. And particularly in the last year, the campaigns that come to mind that we've been trying to push out have been ones that have created a lot of controversy and talkability. So the one that people may be most familiar with, it's quite difficult doing this on an audio one because I've got to try and describe this now. But
yeah, this is where I'm pushing you towards. I'm nodding going, yeah, this is the one. Come on.
Pushing your right knees. Keep going.
Yeah, keep going. So we run one of our class categories is aerial. So aerial are classes where you hang, suspend from the ceiling, aerial yoga, harnesses, trapeze, mm-hmm. etc. So we wanted to promote this class category. So we wanted, the idea was that you were looking down on something and we would have a message. So we had this idea about looking down on top of a London bus. And the message then said, if you're reading this, you're a natural. Aerial class is now available at Gymbox. So we mocked this up, presented it to the boss. He really loved the idea.
It's a great concept. It works, yeah.
It's a great concept, yeah. Advertising on top of buses, it's, you know, not been done, or, you know, may have been done back in the 90s with The Economist for those slightly older listeners. but when we investigated actually the media space, it turned out you couldn't do it. It isn't an option to do TfL Global. Don't offer that as a media channel. But we felt that the ad itself was so good and the concept was so good, we pushed it out as if it was real. A little bit of a white lie. We tried to create a bit of noise. People were guessing, is this real? Is this not real? We got a huge positive spin of PR initially. And then when people realized it was a fake out of home advert, there was a huge backlash to the ad. And I think the advert, you know, going back to the title of what we're talking about today, it's about kind of, you know, creating that noise and impact in a really kind of clever way. And I think this ad, the reason it did so well, it probably actually did better because it wasn't real and we faked it, inverted commas, if I can do that. And the ad itself became the content as opposed to the when I say the ad itself, the picture of the bus with the advert on it became the ad rather than the physical ad itself. And I think that's what created a real kind of controversy and talkability about the campaign. So that was the one that, you know, had really launched Gymbox and made us infamous in the media landscape currently.
So that came out at the same sort of time as it was a Maybelline tube with eyelashes. Ooh. There were a couple of other things at the same sort of time. So I think how important was timing in getting that attention? Because people were definitely talking about fake ads. Were they okay? Were they not okay? Was it misleading? There was a lot of the media were pretty pissed off with you, weren't they?
Yeah, I received some crazy messages from people saying that I'm a liar, and I'm misleading people. And, you know, I always kind of go back to, look, we always try and do things first. Gymbox has been a brand that we try and lead rather than follow. Sometimes we get it right, sometimes we get it wrong. I still think we got this one right, personally, despite the backlash. I think now what you're seeing is, you're right, the Maybelline, it was very CGI focused, the fake ads. And I think, therefore, a lot of people knew it was fake. Mm-hmm. The difference we had, which I think was clever, and I don't think was intentionally clever, was we mocked this up with our in-house designer and our copywriters. It was real people faking it out, if that makes sense. And therefore, it was the fact that people didn't know it was real or not that caused the big kind of debate in Adland. But I think with any of this kind of out-of-home work that you're doing, it's all about trying to stay ahead of the curve. And I think so timing was right, whereas now I think you're seeing these CGI ads and fake ads everywhere, and it's almost become part of the norm, dare I say it?
Yeah. They certainly don't get the same attention in the way that they initially did when they first came out, I don't think. Did you, you've seen, there was a tangible uplift, wasn't there, in terms of numbers as a result of the attention that you got from that advert, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was. And I think this is the bit that I find very interesting, because nobody knows what my objectives were at the time or what a brand's objectives are when they run these kind of attention-grabbing adverts. People are very quick to dismiss or to critique adverts that they see, and this ad hasn't worked because of X or isn't good because of Y. But actually, I go back to what my objective was, which was to drive booking for our aerial classes. And we saw an increase in searches for Gymbox aerial classes. We saw an increase, I think it was about 400% increase on our website of traffic coming to look at our aerial classes. And ultimately our aerial classes for, God, it was probably 3 to 6 months, were booked out on the back of this activity, which cost me £250 just to mock something up, to buy a Getty image, a little bit of copywriting and a tiny bit of graphic design work. It was £250. Best money I'd spend on my budget in probably my time at Gymbox.
I was going to say, in terms of ROI, that's outstanding, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sorry, Dom, go on.
This is what I love, and we talked a bit about this when we did the session at Madfest. Like, Rory, like, Gymbox isn't... it's not like you've got hundreds or... it's not a franchise of hundreds and hundreds of places, is it? You've got a relatively confined footprint in terms of you as a business, right? What makes you go for that more controversial approach? What is it about that sort of seems to be like quite an explicit part of your strategy? But what is it about that for you sort of has led you down that path?
I think it's probably a couple of areas. I think the first one is that challenge around budget. You're right. We're not a big brand, you know, who can just get attention through volume. You know, we can take big TFL tube adverts or bus sides. You know, we have to be a little bit more creative with our money. And therefore, the attention my strategy on it is to try and do stuff that is small, but in terms of location, but actually we get social amplification because the idea is a little bit either controversial or fun or interesting that people then actively want to share. So, you know, we've just done one recently in the last week. So what are we now, kind of mid-September, where we had this idea where we actually did a real advert for a change. It wasn't a fake one. And we took 248 sheet billboards out by the Emirates Stadium in London. And it was so simple. We just had a start line on one. And then 10 meters later, we had a finish line on the other. And we didn't need to do the volume and spend a lot of money. That, again, didn't cost a lot of money to get the space for 1 week. But what we then did was we invited our members to come down and actually attempt the 10-meter dash. And we had, you know, loads of people coming down, and we gave away a free membership, and it became this viral bit of content where people were, you know, getting. It's very hard to actually time somebody running 10 meters because it's very quick.
Isn't it? Yeah.
The winner was like 1.89 seconds or something like that. And again, we not only did we kind of serve that out as a bit of content and get some attention from that, but actually we had people travel from different parts of London to do it on their own back. And they actually then become the advert for Gymbox. So we've had people putting it on TikTok and different social media channels. Here's me doing a 10-meter dash for Gymbox. And it's been, again, to answer your question, Dom, it's kind of, it allows us to spend a little bit of money to get a lot of reach and a lot of volume from the social amplification of that out of home. Yeah. So it's kind of marrying the physical out of home with the digital space.
It's like an effectiveness multiplier. Like by taking that bravery, you know, sort of you've managed to, you know, sort of go much further commercially than you would otherwise have done if you'd used traditional formats and a traditional approach and a traditional tone. That sounds to me like that's the real thing that's done for you, right?
I think it is bravery as well. There's people talking about it a lot on obviously the various social channels and people discussing it. And I can't remember who it was, but another person from the marketing world had said that they'd had that idea before. And really, it's not a complicated idea. It's a part of its beauty is its simplicity. So people have had the idea before, but they haven't done it. And I think that's the thing, is they're having the nerve to do it and go, okay, this is going to work. And people are going to having the confidence that people are going to travel and share it, and you're going to get that attention multiplier, which essentially is what it's become when people are sharing it themselves.
It's funny. The reason I asked the question, Rory, and it's like a sort of role reversal here, is because I'm genuinely interested, because at Kantar, obviously, we've done a lot of work on effectiveness and different and brand effectiveness, and what are the factors that underpin that. And there's sort of a couple of things I'd point to. The first is we've got an overall framework called the Blueprint for Brand Growth, which essentially talks about what are the levers for growth. And one of them is about predisposing more people. Another is about being more present and doing the right things at the right times and the right moments. And the final one is about find new space. And all of those are sort of really, the secret to winning is to be more meaningfully different to more people. But we did a bit of sub-analysis with Side Business School, the University of Oxford Side Business School, and it was about breakthrough brands. And it was about what are the factors that drive the brands with the fastest growth out of all of these things, meaningful, difference, and saliency. And what it shows is that actually, it's the difference, showing up differently, is the thing that makes the biggest difference. It makes the biggest difference to growth. It makes the biggest difference to share price growth, actually, if you're a publicly listed company. And the things that drive difference, because difference isn't about rational product differences, because those can be copied pretty easily. It's about the perception of being a little bit more relatively different compared to competitors, compared to your competitive set, and having a sense of... The things that really seem to drive that are leading the way and creativity and originality and that sort of stuff, actually, and showing up differently. And it's especially when you look at it by brand maturity, difference is especially critical for smaller brands and for challenger brands. Like, it basically is, I guess it's brand Darwinism. Like, be different or die. Right, because if you're not different when you're small or where you're starting out, you're not going to survive. You're not going to cut through. You're not going to create that noise, and you're not going to earn your space in the marketplace. And the trick, of course, is to sustain that sense of difference as you grow up and you get more salience, you get bigger budgets, you become more meaningful to more people. That becomes a different challenge as you grow up for brand maturity curve. But I love hearing it's a bit of a brand masterclass what you're talking about, really, because, you know, you are a relatively tightly defined challenger brand that is fast growing, and you've used the power of creativity to disrupt the marketplace and to be more different and to earn your space in the market, and that's driven the results you need, right? So I'm loving hearing your story about that, because it totally fits with all the data that we see here at Kantar.
Dom, when we've spoken before, you said that not all attention is created equally. And then we spoke a little about active attention and passive attention. And I think what Rory is doing at Gymbox is a really good example of active attention. How important is it that the brands understand the difference between those two types of attention and how they can make the most of them?
Yeah. So it's a simple yet complicated question. So let me break it down. So from a media perspective, because there is a difference between creating saliency and cut through versus attention. So I'm going to just talk about attention as in terms of a media definition. So passive attention is really a quantity measure. It's about the number of eyes on a screen and the average amount of time an ad is watched. There are some complications about actually whether that is a true measure or not, but that's what passive attention is about. Active attention is about the quality of your attention, so it's much more about the emotion involved. So you can look at that through eye tracking and see the facial expressions of people and using AI and whatnot to sort of see their emotional engagement. What we see from our data is that active attention has got a stronger relationship with measures that we find are very important, such as brand recall and likability. But neither active or passive attention are enough. Attention is good from a media perspective. It's better to have it than not having. It's better to have active than just passive. You want that combination of quality and quantity. But ultimately, Kantar's data from the analysis of our Lift Plus global cross-media database shows that actually the things that make the most difference are where you connect that attention to emotion and brand associations. And ultimately, that's got to ladder up to brand predisposition. If that's not building your brand predisposition, it becomes, it's wasted, right? It's a little bit empty. You become a little bit of a hollow shell of a brand, without a brand without substance. What you want is for the attention, whether it's created through your media and your media planning, or whether it's more through PR. You want that to connect to your brand so that people search it out in the right way, for example, which reduces your cost per acquisition, and that, you know, they're coming to you rather than competitors, and they're associating you with the right things, for example, fun or playfulness or whatever you want your brand associations to be, so that they stick with you and they don't drift off to a competitor. So your return on investment is reduced churn, if you like, because often, especially I imagine in the health market and the gym market, one of the challenges is keeping people to be members, right? So you know the stronger the connection with your brand emotionally, the less likely is that people will churn, I imagine. And there's obviously a big commercial benefit to reducing that churn. So I think there are different kinds of attention. Attention isn't just a one-size-all measure. But the other thing that our data shows is that there isn't really a silver bullet, because there are different attention is sort of there is attention can map differently to brand building cost of effectiveness. It can map differently to channel. Brand building contribution. It can not every second of attention costs the same. Not every format within a channel delivers the same attention. Not every ad in a campaign works the same way. And arguably, not every second of attention is created equal. So, Karen Nelson Field, for example, has highlighted that actually attention only connects to your brand when it's over 2.5 seconds long, right? So, and 85% of digital or social content is less than that, right? So you've got a real tension there in that for attention to translate in a positive way on your brand, there is a minimum threshold in media terms where which it needs to work for that memory connection to be made. So that's what I mean by not every, all attention is created equal. Similarly, just because you have a longer piece of communication, like 60 seconds or 90 seconds or even a longer bit of, could even a mini film, that doesn't necessarily mean that attention when you get it, will play out in an incremental way on your brand building. So it works.
Very possibly, even the opposite, actually.
Yeah, exactly. So, there, you know, this stuff is nuanced, shall we say, and it takes craft, right? There is an art and a science to communications and to marketing and to marketing effectiveness. And it does require as much art as it does science, I think, to be truly effective.
So if we're taking Gymbox as kind of, I suppose, the brand that we're looking at everything through the lens of what Gymbox has done and the activity that Rory sort of put out over the last year, after that initial bus stunt, looking at everything Dom has just said in terms of ensuring that the brand continues to have its own voice and it works in different ways, how aware were you that you needed to do something on the back of that, but that worked in a different way, that had that different type of voice to ensure that the audience didn't just go, okay, that's just kind of a one-trick pony, we're doing things a little bit differently here, and that they had that buy-in, they stayed with you, they recognised the Gymbox brand. I think I'm guessing for a lot of the people that saw either that ad or the fallout from the ad, that's the first time they saw you. So how did you go from that to do what Dom was just describing, which is actually building out the perception of your brand?
You know what? It was pretty easy, actually. I'll tell you why. Because there's a culture or a tone or a brand that I stick to and that we have in this business. And what we talk about, never standing still. So I think, you know, when you hit on something, so, you know, there's a lot of brands out there, some really good brands, challenger brands, who do a stunt, a piece of activity, and it goes well, it goes viral or gets great engagement. And then I think what you see is, because they've landed on that, they repeat that again and again and again. And I don't have the data. This is just based on gut, based on opinion, based on what I observe. But I look at brands who do that, and over time you just go, you're just doing the same campaign wrapped up slightly differently every time. Whether that's just posting pictures of dogs every 2 months and referencing it back to sales or whatever it might be. For Gymbox, we're always kind of on to the next thing. So, you know, we just before that campaign, actually, we did a great kind of what I call like the world's first ever four brand collaboration. We did this kind of Daft Punk song with Surreal, Newman, Erectile Dysfunction, and Cheese Geek, which was this kind of feta, faster, stronger, harder line, which again was just something
I love
fun,
that,
different.
By the way.
What's not to like?
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, just again.
That was spearheaded by Gymbox, was it?
I reached out to Kit at Surreal. The brand was just starting out. I thought they were doing some really good stuff. Reached out to them, said we should work together. And then, again, just organically, we came up with the ideas. So we had, from memory, we had just done that before. So that kind of was, we were getting some chatter on that one. Then we did the fake bus advert, which caused chaos. And then what we did after that one, we're always thinking about the next thing. So like, I hate performance marketing, Google, all that sort of stuff, but needs must. We need to drive sales. And, you know, we sat down and we talked about, like, okay, if we were to do a Google campaign, how do we do it? And what we did was we essentially hijacked our competitor adverts. So when someone searched on Google for ClassPass or Third Space or Pure Gym, we were sending them and serving them adverts, which were essentially kind of taking the mickey out of their brand. So if you search for Third Space, we'd say, why settle for third? Be number one at Gymbox. Or for ClassPass, it was never skip a class, come to Gymbox type piece. So to answer that question, we're always kind of thinking about how to just kind of get that brand. So going back to what I said initially about anything goes and our tone and our approach, every touch point in our communication, from our gym to our out of home to our in club signage, has that tone and that kind of attention grabbing piece that it really is just to try and put a smile on your face. Ultimately, at the end of the day, is just to give you a little smile, because people don't see brands, they don't see advertising, they're going about their everyday lives. And we're just trying to put that little magic dust across certain bits of communication. So it kind of comes from our approach to everything we do. You know, going back to Dom's earlier point around, you know, this passive attention, active attention, 60-second adverts, or whatever it might be. we're very mindful that we could do a lot of stuff, but people would just be like, fuck off, Gymbox. Like, come on. You know what I mean? So for every fake bus advert you see, or every kind of start, finish billboard you see, we've probably had another 9-10 ideas that we said no to, that because we believe maybe we're trying too hard, or maybe we're going to piss people off, or maybe we're going to become known for just pushing stuff out that isn't quality enough. And I think, and I hope, and I'll ask your listeners, let me know if you disagree, but I'm hoping that our approach is only to serve the attention grabbing work that we feel is of good quality, and that we think people will resonate with, and not just to do the stuff that's a bit lazy, low hanging fruit.
Yeah, you've got to be for 1%. Don't you? Sorry, I mean, it's funny what you were just, as you were talking, Rory, it reminded me, because I used to be the other side of the fence. I used to be a creative, or a planner in ad agency land. So, and back in the day, you mentioned The Economist. I worked on The Economist in the 1990s. I'm that old, with a guy called David Abbott, who founded Abbott Mead Vickers, BBDO. And David was a legend. And the way he sort of, you know, that campaign, we did six posters per year. That was it. A really famous campaign, but we didn't have very much budget, and we did six posters per year, or outdoors, basically. And the way we used to do it is we probably got 60 or 70 scamps, and we'd just lay them out in the creative department, and you would choose two or three out of those. And he was so good at just being really ruthless at just sort of spotting the gold from all the rest, right? And going for that 1% of what's the execution that's going to make the difference. So that, what, you know, what really feels like it sums up the essence of The Economist back in that period. And it just reminded me what you sort of said, you know, that sort of ruthlessness in going for the stuff that is really bold and that really feels like it's true to your brand and the sort of associations you want it to have. And I definitely feel that from that, certainly that period of working on The Economist. It was a magic, a golden period, and the copy lines were just incredible. And one of the most famous campaigns in the world, done on not very much budget at all, actually. But the earned media, is what we would call it nowadays, effect of that was massive.
But I think there's budget constraints. I mean, you both have spoken to this, but those budget constraints, if they force people to think more creatively, and that's what forces the ideas to happen, I think, that people then resonate with. Even with the sort of the longer term brand building piece that Gymbox is doing, which is it's Made for London Life, isn't it? So even those ideas are pretty punchy. And it's not a huge, great, big, glitzy TV at films, is it? It's still essentially billboard campaigns, but it's just getting that consistency out there as well with that brand building.
I think from the Kantar data, we've got sort of a couple of brands this year that really stand out, talking about that consistency piece, Jackie. It's because, you know, people sometimes say to me, oh, you can only be relatively different if you're a smaller brand. And sure, like I do think, you know, differentiate or die if you're small, like it's that simple. But if you're a bigger brand, it's still totally possible to show up in a different way and to relative to your competitors. Guinness does it. M&S definitely is doing it. M&S is a masterclass this year in how to
Which particular adverts are you referring to for both those brands?
Well, I think it's interesting to see the journey that they're on in clothing, in apparel and clothing, but I would sort of say the food stuff, you know, is they've been using this, I think they're on the 20th execution now. And the trick, I think they're just doing the new gastropub campaign that's just broken this week, and you know, they're just trying, they've got a certain kind of, you know, it's a much more of a paid for sort of formula there rather than an earned formula, but what they're trying to be is consistently different, so each execution builds on the last one, and now they're sort of taking the idea of, you know, quality and quality ingredients and bringing those outdoor cues and putting that into their pre-packed meals. And that's a different sort of way of bringing it to life. I mean, Nationwide is another great example, actually, where they've fundamentally shifted the trajectory of that campaign, a fairly long-running campaign, and they've done that over the last 12 months and given it a real breath of fresh air. And the Kantar data shows that, you know, their difference scores have gone through the roof this year. And it really has had an impact in the market in terms of people's perceptions of Nationwide, just using, you know, Dominic, I think it's Dominic West's campaign, and, you know, how they've showed up in a different way. It's signaled a change, right? And it's tapped into people's uncomfortableness with banks in a way that just seems to concentrate those feelings, but in a way that connects it in a positive way to Nationwide. It's really well branded, and it's sort of, it sets them apart from the other high street businesses, sort of financial institutions, and that's what they're trying to do.
The standout thing I think about the Nationwide campaign is that it surprises people. It's not what they're expecting to see. They're not expecting to see the advert, like, say, challenging other banks and saying that what they're doing is wrong and tapping into that sort of negative feeling that the public have. And I think that's what's really interesting. It's not so much a shock marketing in that way, but it certainly bumps people out of their comfort zone slightly.
Yeah. It's bold,
I think.
Isn't it?
For a large, like, household name to do that is unusual. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's true to them. I think that's the key, right? I mean, the same way the stuff you're doing with Gymbox is true to you, Rory, and true to your business, and that anything goes spirit, right? It's true what Nationwide is doing is true, and M&S, it's true to what they're about. And what we see, you know, again, the Kantar data shows again and again that the brands that are successful, and brands are long-term things, let's not forget, you know, they're not built on just on throwaway stunts or empty salience. They're built on, you know, proper brands have a proper heart. They've got richness and depth and emotion and power and substance, as well as style, right? And that's, Cadbury's is a great example. McDonald's is a great example of a brand that for a long time is getting it right. Greggs is getting it really right at the moment as well. Even Tony Chocolonely, right? So, you know, there's not all just big brands, but those brands, you know exactly what they're about. And they keep surprising you, but they are always true to themselves, and they show up in a way which is consistently different, right? They're always themselves. And
consistent, you know, difference, yeah.
I think there's two points on that one, actually. I think the first one is you've got to stay true to your brand. I think it's a really important point Dom makes, because, again, Gymbox, we're consistent. We're consistently inconsistent, i.e. we do random stuff. It all comes back to our brand and our brand values, and anything goes. But I think you do see some brands out there that, you know, might want to jump on a trend that doesn't suit them, that they've seen this, you know, they've seen some, you know, stunt or work, and they feel, oh, we should jump on that. And you can see the kind of the zigzagging that they're doing, and it doesn't layer up to kind of what they are as a brand. And I think the second point on that is it's about just trying to, you know, have that end goal of what you want to achieve and what your vision for the brand is, and then just deliver that across every single touch point that you do, whether that's digital, social, kind of at a home, wherever that might be. Because I think that, again, consumers don't see the difference between, you know, the different channels. We sit here and talk about channels. They just see Gymbox are doing X or Tony Chocolonely's are doing Y. And I think that's a really key point with this kind of whole impact and attention. It's about getting the attention you want for your brand and how you want people to speak about your brand. And that's really key.
And how do you want people to speak about Gymbox?
I think Gymbox is, we're a bit of a Marmite brand. So I think the people that I want to join Gymbox are people that have this kind of attitude for life and are different. So I want people to talk about Gymbox in two ways. One, Gymbox is this kind of community that I can be the person I want to be. And I also want people to say Gymbox are absolutely fucking terrible and I hate them. I want both.
I wasn't expecting that answer. I'll be completely honest with you.
But I'll be honest. I think, look, we if we don't get hate with some of the stuff we're doing, we're not doing a good enough job as a disruptive brand. And that's not to get attention. That's just because we are a very different brand. Like, we are what I say, the antidote to boring gyms. We're not your normal gym. We're the place where working out is meant to be as fun as going out. And, you know, it's we want people to think of Gymbox as a place they can just come and be whoever they want to be. You know, whether you want to come and pole dance or whether you want to kind of box and whatever you want to do, it's the place you can kind of come and do that. There'll be no clicks or no hang-ups or no kind of judgment at Gymbox. And some people just don't get us as a brand, and that's okay.
Yeah, you're defining, like, you're the anti-boring brand, aren't you? And mm. you're the anti-boring gym brand. And in a market which is saturated with, you know, and that's got a number of competitors, you need to do that to put your flag down in the marketplace and define your position and go, this is us. And, yeah, take your position and stick true to it and have fun with it. It's interesting, like, certainly in my experience, and actually some of the data with the IPA shows that a lot of brands, successful brands, tend to have really quite stable teams, right? And because it comes down to personal relationships, whether with you know the management team, the marketing team, the relationship.
The board need to trust that what you're doing. If you're putting forward ideas that are potentially could go really one way or the other, they need to trust that they're in safe hands, don't they?
Yeah, it's trust, and it becomes instinctive, right? And that's the thing. You sort of it's like being in a relationship, right? You can sort of, you know what someone else is thinking instinctively, right? And the best relationships sort of have that, but you earn that over time. But and that's how a brand can stay true to itself, as where certainly the data seems to show that, you know, longer term relationships tends to have, you know, the Cadbury's team at VCCP and the Mondelez client have been, you know, it's like a 5-year plus, 6-year plus relationship. The Economist relationship was a really long standing one. The one I had on Volkswagen when I was at Adam and Eve DDB, that was, you know, over 40 years. And even the, you know, the marketing team there had been there for 10 years. So you can, you speak the same language, and that allows you to take bolder decisions, to trust each other more, and to respect each other, and to challenge each other constructively, I think, as well.
I think you're right on that. By the way, on that point, I'd never thought of it that way, Dom, but you're right, because I'm at Gymbox now 6.5 years. I must admit, it took me probably somewhere between kind of like 8 to 18 months to really get my head around the brand and the tone and what felt right, both internally and to our consumers. So I think, you know, we have a founder-led business, and for me to get that trust from the founder has taken a long time. And over time, that founder has got less and less involved because there's that trust element around Rory now gets the brand. But that took, and, you know, it's no easy feat for marketers coming in. It takes a long time to really get to know your brand, not just a challenger brand like Gymbox. I believe any brand, to get that tone, to get the kind of the knowledge that you have both from your members, consumers, and the media, and the type of copy that you should use. It takes a long time.
And it's funny when you see brands kind of rediscovering that mojo, like the McDonald's team, actually, at Leo Burnett. And McDonald's.
I think it's quite heartening when you see a massive brand suddenly, like, the pieces click into place. You're like, oh, look, their team, suddenly they've got it. They're doing something really great. Mm.
There's a playfulness to creativity and to brand, and where that's where the magic happens. And suddenly where, you know, McDonald's got, you know, tuned into the eyebrow creative, and suddenly they'd found, you know, they'd kind of put the bits of the jigsaw together in a slightly different way. And it felt like a brand that had found its groove suddenly. And
it's a great way to put it.
Up, right? You could feel the brands kind of creatively, in terms of the communications bit of the mix, really loosening up.
Yeah, they're almost relaxing into what they're doing a bit more. Rory, ooh. Dom's mentioned a couple of brands that he thinks are doing things particularly well in terms of attention at the moment, other than Gymbox, of course. Who have you got your eye on?
Do you know what? There's some great work going on at the moment. I mentioned the Surreal guys earlier, who I think, you know, they're hit and miss. I think some of the stuff's great. I kind of mentioned them tongue in cheek about the dogs. They love a dog post on social, but I think they do a great job. The brand I think I really admire at the moment is Beavertown. I love the work that Beavertown are doing. Again, challenger brand, but actually a bit bigger behind the scenes. And it goes back to Dom's earlier point around you can still be a big brand, but do these challenger piece of activity. And I just love the consistency they have. The creative is very unique, with the kind of skulls and crosses.
Absolutely, immediately identifiable as them, though, isn't it? It's so unique compared to
whatever other brand is doing, you know, Budweiser, Coors, Corona, all these brands are doing the same bits, and they are the kind of antidote to all that, for want of a better word. But it's not only that, it's their, I've seen some great PR kind of campaigns and stunts they've done where they, and they're really impactful, i.e. one of their beers is neck oil, but they actually created a sunscreen, which was a neck oil, because men having cancer on their neck sitting in beer gardens during the summer, there was actually a stat around the increase of skin cancer. So they created this sunscreen, which was branded neck oil, linked to the name of one of their beers, and they gave them out so men can make sure they're actually sunscreening their when they're sitting drinking beer, which I thought was really clever.
That's really clever.
They've also done a really great partnership with CAM, the mental health charity, where you can have a packet of crisps that has questions in there for men to open up and talk to each other about certain bits, because men are notoriously bad at communicating, particularly to each other. And they created this stool in pub, which is kind of a way you can sit, and it's branded All Beavers. And I just love what they do. I think everything they do, going back to just not doing too much, but everything they do is of high quality. And I think the Tom, who's the marketing director there, and the guys at Beavertown just nail it every time. Love them.
I saw the stool thing. That's been in the last couple of weeks. So that's quite a recent thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's almost like a friendship bench, like you get in school playgrounds, but it's to be inside a pub and to encourage that conversation. It's really, really
for
lovely
for loneliness and people to open up and talk. I just think it's one of those campaigns that, look, let's face it, running between a billboard, fun, it's just a bit of fun, but the campaigns they do seem to have real meaning, which I quite like. I think it's really, really, really great to see brands doing that.
What I love about the way you're talking, Rory, is I can feel your passion for creativity, right? And feel for the craft of creativity and for what brands are and how to use the power, the superpower of creativity to kind of unlock for potential to find that extra edge. I'm loving just listening to you in sort of it's like the sand pit, if you like, of creativity.
I'd love
to have the data behind it to know if it works.
I'm going to say, I was really sorry, but it's time for listening is almost over. I'm going to ask you guys both to wrap up. Looking at what we've spoken about today, thank you so much for all of the time that you have spent with us. If you got each one final thought that we can just end on, that would be great. Dom, first. To put you on the spot.
I would sort of say attention is the gateway to effectiveness, but it's not enough. Don't get hooked on the dopamine of empty stunts in themselves. Think about great brands like McDonald's and how they've transformed over the years and use all the bits of a marketing store experience, the products, the promotions and the advertising that's a brand that's grown over 6 times in value. It's in huge increases in meaningful and different. So I would sort of say think big, but you know, be consistently different, or possibly inconsistently different, but you know, sort of but you know, sort of think big, and no matter how big or small you are, you can always learn from other people and get inspired. And that's what I've taken out of this conversation, Rory, is listening to you and your reference points and how you think outside. So get inspired by the power of creativity and challenge yourselves to think bold and be consistently different would be my one.
Thank you. Rory?
I'd say, look, from an attention point of view, be true to your brand, surprise people and try and be consistently inconsistent and not just continue with the same work. And I think you just need to just make people smile, surprise people. And I think if you just follow that kind of framework, you'll get that impact and that kind of positive response that you're hoping to receive from these kind of impactful pieces of creative.
Thank you very much. Thank you both very much. And thank everyone for listening.